Chapter 5. Minduus. Summer, 528 AD. Out. Belisarius's eyes were like dark stones worn smooth in a stream. Cold, pitiless pieces of an ancient mountain. Out, he repeated. The fat officer standing rigidly before him began to protest again, then, seeing the finality in the general's icy gaze, waddled hastily out of the command tent. See to it that he's on the road within the hour, said Belisarius to Morris, and watch who he talks to on his way out. His friends will commiserate with him, and those friends will likely have the same habits.
With pleasure, sir.
The Hecatontarch motioned to one of the three Thracian cataphracts who were standing quietly in the rear of the tent. The cataphract, a stocky man in his mid-30s, grinned evilly and began to leave. On your way out, Gregory, said Belisarius, send in that young Syrian you recommended. Gregory nodded and exited the tent. Belisarius resumed his seat. For a moment he listened to the sounds of a busy military camp filtering into the tent, much as a musician might listen to a familiar tune. He thought he detected a cheerful boisterousness in the half-hearted vulgarities being exchanged by unseen soldiers, and hoped he was right. In the first days after his arrival, the sounds of the camp had been sodden with resentment. A different sound drew his attention. He glanced over at the desk in the corner of the tent where Procopius, his new secretary, was scribbling away industriously. The desk, like the chair upon which the secretary sat, was of the plainest construction. But it was no plainer than Belisarius's own desk or chair. Procopius had been astonished, not to mention disgruntled, when he discovered his new employer's austere habits. Within a week after their arrival, the secretary had attempted to ingratiate himself by presenting Belisarius with a beautifully embroidered silk-covered cushion. The general had politely thanked Procopius for the gift, but had immediately turned it over to Morris, explaining that it was his long-standing custom to share all gifts with his Bucellarii. The following day, Procopius watched goggle-eyed as the Thracian cataphracts used the cushion as the target in their mounted archery exercises. Very briefly, the cruel, razor-sharp blades of the war arrows driven by those powerful bows had shredded the cushion within minutes. The secretary had been pale with fury and outrage, but had possessed enough wit to maintain silence in the face of Thracian grins. And, admitted Belisarius, since then. You've done well, Procopius, said Belisarius suddenly, helping to ferret out these petty crooks. The secretary looked up, startled. He began to open his mouth, then closed it. He acknowledged the praise with a simple nod and returned to his work. Satisfied, Belisarius looked away. In the weeks since they had been together in the army camp near Darius, Procopius had learned painfully that his new employer gave flattery short shrift. On the other hand, he prized hard work and skillfulness. And whatever his other characteristics, there was no question that Procopius was an excellent secretary. Nor was he indolent. He had been a great help in shredding the corruption which riddled Belisarius's new army. The soldier entered the tent.
You called for me, sir?
Belisarius examined him. The man appeared to be barely 20. He was quite short, but muscular. A Syrian, with, Belisarius judged, considerable Arab stock in his ancestry. The soldier was wearing a simple standard uniform. A mantle, a shirt, boots, and a belt. The belt held up a scabbarded spatha, the sword which the modern Roman army used in place of the ancient gladius. The spatha was similar to a gladius, a straight-bladed, double-edged sword suitable for either cutting or thrusting, but it was 6 inches longer. The cloak, helmet, mailed tunic, and shield, which were also part of the man's uniform, were undoubtedly resting in his tent. In the Syrian daytime, cloaks made the heat unbearable, and the soldier's armor and shield were unneeded in the daily routine of the camp. Your name is Mark, I believe.
Mark of Edessa?
Yes, sir. Mark's face bore slight traces of apprehension mixed with puzzlement. Belisarius allayed his concerns instantly. I am promoting you to Hecatontarch of the Third Ayla, he announced. His tone was stern and martial. The man's eyes widened slightly. He stood a bit straighter. Peter of Redestus, as I'm sure you know, is the regiment's tribune. You will report to him. Then, in a softer tone, you are young to be assigned command over 100 men and somewhat inexperienced. But both Peter and Constantine, the cavalry's Kiliarch, speak well of you, and so do the men of my own personal retinue. He motioned slightly toward the back of the tent where Morris and 2 other cataphracts stood. Mark glanced toward the Thracians. His face remained still, but the youth's gratitude was apparent. 2 things before you go, said Belisarius. All traces of softness vanished from his voice. Constantine and Peter, as well as the other tribunes of the cavalry, know my views on corrupt officers and are in agreement with them. But I will take the time now to express them to you directly. As you are aware, I will not tolerate an officer who steals from his own men. Thus far, since I inherited this army from another, I have satisfied myself with simply dismissing such officers. In the future, however, with officers who take command knowing my views, the punishment will be considerably more severe. Extreme, in fact. Belisarius paused, gauging the young Syrian, and decided that further elaboration on the matter was unnecessary. Mark's face sheened with perspiration, but the sweat was simply the product of the stifling heat within the tent. Belisarius took a cloth and wiped his own face. A final point. You are a cavalryman, and have been, I understand, since you first joined. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Then understand something else. I will not tolerate the cavalry lording it over the infantry. Do you understand? Mark's face twitched just a tiny bit. Speak frankly, Mark of Edessa. If you are unclear as to my meaning, say so. I will explain, and I promise there will be no censure. The young Syrian glanced at his general, made a quick assessment, and spoke.
I'm not quite sure I do, sir.
It's simple, Mark. As you will discover soon enough, my tactical methods use the infantry to far greater effect than Roman armies normally do. But for those tactics to work, the infantry must have the same pride and self-esteem as the cavalry. I can't build and maintain that morale if I have cavalrymen deriding the foot soldiers and refusing to take on their fair share of the hard work, which normally falls almost entirely on the infantry. I will not tolerate cavalrymen lounging around in the shade while foot soldiers sweat rivers, building encampments and fortifications, and mocking the foot soldiers often enough. Do you understand?
Yes, sir.
Firmly. Clearly. Good. You will be allowed to select the Decarchs for your 100. All 10 of them. Mark stood very straight.
Thank you, sir.
Belisarius repressed a smile. Sternly. Use your own judgment, but I urge you to consult with Peter. And you might also discuss the matter with Morris and Gregory. I think you'll find them quite helpful.
I will do so, sir.
A word of caution. Advice, rather. Avoid simply selecting from your own circle of friends. Even if they prove capable, it will produce resentment among others. A capable clique is still a clique, and you will undermine your own authority.
Yes, sir.
And most of all, make sure your Decarchs understand and accept my attitudes. You will be selecting them, which will reflect upon how I regard you. Your prestige among the cavalrymen whom you command will be thereby enhanced. Do not ever forget the corollary. I will hold you responsible for the conduct of your subordinates as well as your own.
Do I make myself clear?
As clear as day, sir. Another quick assessment of his new general.
Syrian day.
Now Belisarius did smile. Good. You may go. Once Mark was gone, the 3 Thracians at the back of the tent relaxed and resumed their normal casual pose. In public, the members of Belisarius's personal retinue of 300 cataphracts maintained certain formalities. Most of them, after all, held lowly official ranks. Even Morris, their commander, was only a hecatontarch, the same official rank as the Syrian youth who had just left the tent. In actual practice, the Thracian Bucellarii served Belisarius as his personal staff. They had been carefully selected by him over a period of years, and the devotion of his retinue was fully reciprocated. Morris, despite his rank, was in effect Belisarius's executive officer. Even Constantine, who was in overall command of the army's cavalry, along with the Kiliarch Phocas, who was his equivalent for the infantry, had learned to accept his actual authority. And as they got to know the grizzled veteran, respected as well.
I believe the boy will work out quite nicely, commented Morris. Quite nicely, once he gets blooded a bit.
Morris's smile vanished, replaced by a scowl. I can't believe how badly your predecessor Libellarius let this army fall to pieces. Chiseling on fodder and gear is common enough, but we've even found cases where the men's pay was stolen. In some of the infantry regiments, at least. And the food, exclaimed Basil, one of the other cataphracts. Bad enough these bastards sell off some of the food, but they were cheating at both ends. The food was shit to begin with, half-rotten when they bought it. The third of the cataphracts chimed in. He was one of the few non-Thracians in Belisarius's retinue, an Armenian by the name of Ashot. What's even worse is the state of the army as a whole. What are we supposed to have, General? 8,000 men, half cavalry? Belisarius nodded. Ashot laughed scornfully. What we've got, once you take a real count and strip away the names of fictitious soldiers whose pay these pigs have been pocketing, is 5,000 men, not 4 in 10 of them cavalry. Belisarius wiped his face again. He had spent most of his time since arriving at the camp trapped in the leaden, breezeless air of his tent. The heat was oppressive and the lack of exercise was beginning to tell on him. And, he concluded wearily, the force structure's a joke. In order to hide the chiseling, this army's got twice as many official units as it does men to fill them properly.
Nothing worse than a skeleton army, grumbled Morris. I found one infantry hundred that had all of 22 actual soldiers in it, with, naturally, a full complement of officers, a hecatontarch and all 10 decarchs, living high off the hog.
He spit on the floor.
4 of those so-called decarchs didn't have a single soldier under their command, not even one.
Belisarius rose and stretched. Well, that's pretty much behind us. Within 2 more days, we'll have this army shaken down into a realistic structure with decent officers, and decent morale restored to the troops, I think. He cast a questioning glance at Ashot and Basil. Belisarius relied on his low-ranked cataphracts to mingle with the troops and keep his fingers on the pulse of his army.
Morale's actually high, General, said Ashot.
Basil nodded agreement and added,
Sure, things are still crappy for the troops, and will be for a bit, but they don't expect miracles, and they can see things are turning around. Mostly, though, the troops are cheerful as cherubs from watching one sorry-ass chiseler after another come into this tent, and then within the hour depart through the gates.
Deadly with a blade, is Belisarius, quoted Ashot, laughing. They'd heard that, some of them. Now they all believe it. How's the drill going? Asked Belisarius. Morris made a fluttering motion with his hand.
So-so. Just so-so. But I'm not worried about it. The troops are just expressing their last resentment by sloughing it off during the drill. Give it a week. Then we'll start seeing results.
Push it, Morris. I'm not demanding miracles, but keep in mind that we don't have much time. I can't delay our departure to Minduus for more than a fortnight. Belisarius rose and walked over to the entrance of his tent. Leaning against a pole, he stared through the open flap at the camp. As always, his expression was hard to read. But Morris, watching, knew the general wasn't happy with his orders. The orders received by courier a week earlier were plain and simple. Move to Minduus and build a fort. Simple, clear orders. And Morris knew orders which Belisarius considered idiotic. Belisarius had said nothing to him, of course. For all the general's casual informity when dealing with his Thracian retinue, he maintained a sharp demarcation with regard to matters he considered exclusively reserved for command. But Morris knew the general as well as any man, and so he knew, though nothing had been said directly, that Belisarius thought the Roman Empire was deliberately provoking Persia for no good reason, and was then piling stupidity onto recklessness by provoking the Mede without first seeing to it that the provocation would succeed. No, Belisarius had said nothing to Morris, but Morris knew him well. And if Morris lacked his general's extraordinary intelligence, he was by no means stupid, and very experienced in the trade of war. Morris didn't feel himself qualified to make a judgment as to the emperor's wisdom in provoking the Persians, but he did feel qualified to make a judgment on the means the emperor had chosen to do so. And he thought, given the state of the Byzantine forces in the area, provoking Persia was about as sensible as provoking a lion with a stick. The Persians maintained a large army stationed near the upper Euphrates, close to the border. In quiet times, that army was billeted at the fortified city of Nisibis. Now, with hostilities looming, the Mede army had moved north and established a temporary camp, threatening the Anatolian heartland of the Roman Empire. To oppose them, to provoke them, no less, the Romans had only 17,000 men in the area. 5,000 of those were represented by Belisarius's army, which, when he assumed command, had proven to be as brittle as a rotten twig, as badly corrupted an army as Morris had seen anywhere. The remaining 12,000 men were stationed not far away in Lebanon. That army, from what Morris had been able to determine, was in fairly good condition. Certainly it seemed to have none of the rampant corruption which they had encountered at Darius. But Morris was an old veteran, well past his 40th year. He had learned long since that numbers didn't weigh as heavily in war as morale, and especially command. The army of Lebanon was under the command of two brothers, Buzes and Cutzes. Not bad fellows, Morris thought, all things considered. Thracians themselves, as it happened, which predisposed Morris in their favor. But young, even younger than Belisarius, and unfortunately with none of the wily cunning which so often made Belisarius seem a man of middle age, or even older. No, bold and brash were the brothers, and they had made clear under no conditions willing to subordinate themselves to Belisarius, nor could Belisarius force them to. Though he was more experienced than Buzes and Cutzes, than both of them put together, thought Morris glumly, and carried a far greater reputation, the brothers were officially ranked as high as he. It was a new rank for them, and one in which they took great pride. Shiny new generaldom, which they were not about to tarnish by placing under the hand of another. Outnumbered, under a divided command, his own army shaky from rot, the majority of the Roman forces under the command of brash, untested youth, and now ordered to poke the Persian lion. Belisarius sighed very faintly and turned back to the interior of the tent. How is the other matter going? He asked.
The pilfering?
Belisarius nodded.
We're bringing it under control, said Morris. Now that rations have started to flow properly again, the troops don't have any real reason to steal from the locals. It's more a matter of habit than anything else.
That's exactly my concern, said Belisarius. Looting's the worst habit an army can develop.
Can't stop it, sir, said Morris.
Sometimes he thought his beloved general was impractical. Not often, true. He was startled to hear Belisarius's hands slamming the desk. Morris, I don't want to hear the old voice of experience. The general was quite angry, Morris noted, with some surprise. Unusual, that. The old veteran straightened his posture. He didn't, however, flinch. Angry generals had long since failed to cause him to quiver in fear. Any generals, much less Belisarius. And sure enough, after a moment, he saw the crooked smile make its appearance. Morris, I'm not a fool. I realize that soldiers look upon booty as one of their time-honored perks. And that's fine, as long as we're talking about booty. Belisarius tightened his own jaw. It's one thing for an army to share in the spoils of a campaign, fairly apportioned in an organized manner after the campaign's over and the victory is certain. It's another thing entirely for soldiers to get in the habit of plundering and stealing, and generally taking anything they want whenever the mood strikes them. Let that happen, and pretty soon you don't have an army anymore, just a mob of thieves, rapists, and murderers. He eyed Morris. Speaking of which,
hung 'em yesterday, sir. All four.
The girl's surviving brother was able to identify them once he got over his terror at being there. I sent him on to Aleppo, then to join his sister.
Have you heard from the monks?
Morris grimaced. Yes. They've agreed to take care of the girl as best they can, but they don't expect she'll recover. And
another grimace.
And they had harsh words to say about Christian soldiers.
Yes, sir.
As well they might. Did the troops watch the execution?
Not the execution itself, no. At least,
not the army as a whole.
A lot of them did, of course, but I gave orders to let the bodies sway in the breeze until the heat and the vultures make skeletons out of them.
They'll all get the message, sir.
Belisarius wiped his face wearily. For a time.
He stared ruefully at the grimy cloth in his hand. The rag was too soaked to do more than smear the sweat. He reached out and hung it on a peg to dry.
But there'll be another incident, he continued after resuming his seat. This army's had too much rot infected. Soon enough, there'll be another incident.
When it happens, Morris, I'll have the officer in command of the men strung up alongside them. I won't accept any excuses.
Pass the word.
Morris took a deep breath, then let it out. He wasn't afraid of Belisarius, but he knew when the general wasn't to be budged.
Yes, sir.
The general's gaze was hard.
I'm serious about this, Morris.
Make certain the men understand my attitude. Make absolutely certain the officers do. The general relented slightly.
It's not simply a matter of the conduct one expects from Christian soldiers, Morris. If the men can't understand that, then make sure they understand the practical side of it. You and I have both seen too many battles lost, or at best halfway won, because the troops got diverted at the critical moment, allowing the enemy to escape or rally for a counterattack because they're busy scurrying around for some silver plate and chickens to steal or a woman to rape, or just the pleasure of watching a town burn. A town, more often than not, that's the only place to find billeting, or would have been if it weren't a pile of ashes.
Yes, sir.
Belisarius eyed Morris a moment longer, then smiled.
Trust me in this, old friend. I know you think I've got my head in the clouds, but I'll prove you wrong.
Morris smiled back.
I've never thought you had your head in the clouds, General, though at times the air you breathe is a bit rarefied.
The Hecatontarch eyed his two subordinates and gestured slightly with his head. Immediately, Ashot and Basil left the tent.
May I suggest you get some sleep, sir?
Morris didn't even look toward Procopius. The veteran had made clear, in none too subtle ways, that he regarded the secretary much as he regarded an asp. Procopius set down his pen, arose, and exited the tent himself, quite hastily. After the others had left, Morris made his own exit. But at the entrance of the tent, he hesitated and turned back.
I don't want you to misunderstand me, General. I'm skeptical that it'll work, that's all. Other than that, I've no problem with your policy. None. Measured out the ropes myself, I did, and cut the lengths, and enjoyed every moment of it.
Later, after the noises of the camp had died down, Belisarius reached into his tunic and withdrew the jewel. It was resting in the small pouch which Antonina had dug up. He opened the pouch and spilled the jewel onto his palm.
Come on, he whispered. You've had enough sleep. I need your help.
The facets spun and flickered. Energy was returning now. And during the long stasis, AIM had been able to digest, so to speak, its bizarre experiences. The thoughts were clearer now, still as alien, but no longer impossible to fathom. AIM didn't have much energy yet, but enough, it decided. And so it was that the General Belisarius, lying on his cot almost asleep, suddenly bolted upright. Again, his face emerging from the ground, coalescing from the remnants of spider webs and bird wings and laurel leaves, suddenly soaring into the heavens utterly transformed. The wings were now the pinions of a dragon,
the laurel leaves bursting flame and thunder, and the spider webs were the spinnings of his mind, weaving their traps, spreading their strands through an infinite distance. Future.